Hello and welcome to Red Femme. We're recording this on the day that Gypsy Rose Blanchard was released from prison. Very special day. My name is Hannah and I'm here with my co-host Jen. Hi, Jen.
Yeah, and we are the Red Femme podcast. We're available on Apple and Spotify every Monday, sometimes shortly after midnight on Mondays. And our bonus episodes are on Patreon every Thursday, sometimes also shortly after midnight on Thursdays.
Yeah, we do try. So, Gypsy Rose, what do you know about the case?
Oh, I watched the dramatization.
Okay.
I watched it probably 4 years ago now, though.
Mm.
So I'm aware that her mom had Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And the way that, I don't know how much this series covered all the ins and outs, but that basically she convinced Gypsy that she was both younger and ill, which she wasn't. Mm. And it was even stuff like she's allergic to sugar.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Gypsy kind of realized this wasn't true and started like eating, you know, chocolate, whatever, out of the fridge at night. And she became aware that this just wasn't true. And then I think all her teeth rotted because her mom also hadn't taught her to clean her teeth.
And I think she was giving her medication that was quite toxic for her teeth as well.
Yeah. So it was a case of severe neglect. And really the mum did this. Didn't she pretend she had cancer and she had all these different things?
She could pretend she had cancer. She pretended she had developmental disabilities. So it was also like she has the mind of an 8-year-old or the intelligence of an 8-year-old. She pretended she had muscular sclerosis, I think it was, MS.
Oh, and that she couldn't walk.
Yes, and that she had cancer.
Yeah.
So this
was all, I mean, as Munchausen syndrome, my proxy is generally, but it was all for attention.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the media, you know, like, and it was like a way to fundraise. So they fundraised like a ramp. I think the public fundraised a ramp for Gypsy's chair.
And they got a house out of it. They got a Habitat for Humanity house. The mum also had a part of the scam, the malingering, was that, oh, our house was destroyed. Everything was destroyed in Hurricane Katrina. So they also had were Hurricane Katrina victims, or she had kind of narrative folded into it. So you think, oh, this disabled child, this lovely mum, Hurricane Katrina victims, and they fleeced many a charity, Make-A-Wish, free trips, free house. It was a full-blown malingering operation as well. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that for people like that, the money is part of it. But I think it's really the money supports the narrative.
Yeah.
Like all these people wouldn't be giving money if it weren't true.
Mm.
And then there's always that thing of, oh, well, you know, she's only got the mind of an 8-year-old. So therefore don't believe anything she says if she contradicts me.
Yeah. And she said that her mum, anytime she spoke in public, would hold her hand and then squeeze her hand anytime she said something wrong. And that in doctor's appointments, she would just be like, oh, this is a developmentally disabled child. And I'm like her advocate, basically. And people bought that.
Yeah. I mean, people tend not to question the goodwill of the parents because, again, there's this idea that, you know, it's ideological, but that families are wonderful units that have good intentions towards their children.
Always, yeah.
And one another. This is also why people don't believe wife battery, because they think, oh, no, but a husband would not have this bad intention towards his wife.
Or incest. The whole, people are really skeptical of incest, sexual abuse claims, father-daughter incest, which is a lot more common than people think it is.
Well, it's just, I suppose this is similar to our Christmas episode last week, but it always surprises me when people make certain assumptions. So whenever someone says to me something like, oh, my father died recently, I never go immediately, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I always go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I wait for them to say.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people that I know are like, I'm so glad my abusive dad is dead. And they still will tell people things. Do you really need to burp on the podcast?
I didn't mean to. It just slipped out. And I tried to like contain it.
Okay.
And it came up. Sorry. And then it ended up making a worse sound.
Yeah.
But I just burped. Sorry. Sorry about that.
And I always wait a bit. I saw this weird thing. This relates, but slightly off topic. I saw this weird viral clip last week. So during Christmas week of the Joe Budden podcast. And there's a guy on it who's white, but he looks mixed race, so everyone assumed he was. And he is all about like supporting the black community and anti-racist politics. And these other men on the podcast who were all black, it was one in particular, started really getting into him about being married to a white woman. And he was like, well, look, I've dated black women. And then he said, well, after that one didn't work out, why didn't you date another one? He said, oh, I did. But then I just happened to fall in love with a white woman after being in love with various black women. This is the one that seemed viable and we got married and da, da, da. And I thought it's so strange because they were trying to say, unless you're married to a black woman, like you're not helping the black community, why is it necessarily a good thing? You might be a terrible husband.
Yeah.
Why is it, oh, you, this idea that we have to pretend that like husbands are these supportive, wonderful characters when we know that that's not always the case. It might well be that he's terrible to his wife. So it's just this absolute unwillingness to accept that more than we think, it's not good to be married to a certain person. It's not good to have a certain person as your supposed beloved mom who's just helping out their disabled child.
Yeah.
Or that when a parent dies, I never go. It's the same, honestly, when a friend of mine who has a partner and two kids and she got pregnant and decided to have an abortion. Whenever she had to speak to like two managers at work to get time off. Mm. And as soon as she said, okay, look, I'm pregnant. They both went, oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was like, no, actually I need to have time off for an abortion. And I thought, how could you lead with anything else? Because then they'd have to, so she then led the conversation with, oh, hi, I need time off for an abortion. They'd go, oh, are you pregnant? Yes, I am. I don't need time off for an abortion because I want to go go-karting. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's just this thing of, yeah, it's so, and people rush in. And she said to me, you're the only person who, when I told that I was pregnant, didn't immediately act all happy and positive. I think I said something like, okay, and how's that? Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And then she said, well, actually, I really think I want an abortion. And you're the only person who's asked.
Mm.
And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I feel like just invoking the family as a concept covers up all manner of things. And there's so much taboo that goes on, really. Like, just the fact, just this whole story about her being this lovely mother just covered up all the questions. And like, it's, you know, I used to be really critical of alternative medicine, and I still am. I still think most of it's hokey and most of it's nonsense. But I've become, it was really transgenderism that led me to be more critical of modern medicine or Western medicine in general. And then also stories like this, woman had like a feeding tube, unnecessary surgeries. Like, it's probably the most extreme case of Munchausen by proxy that's ever been discovered or recorded. And like, how did doctors go ahead with these surgeries that were completely unnecessary?
I think that they don't study the child, they listen to the adult.
Yeah.
And we just live in the society that takes the parents' authority as word. And, you know, as law. And I just don't know why we do this, especially in medical science, because you'd say, all right, I'll listen to the parent and then I'll look for the organic reality in the child.
Yeah.
And wasn't it one of the doctors eventually just sort of started to not believe because he could sort of see the way she was sat in her wheelchair or the way she was moving her legs a bit or something? Or there was something to do with one of them working out that she was eating sugar, even though the mum said, oh, yeah, I think she drank like a Coke in front of a doctor.
Yeah.
And then the mum said, oh, my God, she can't have that. She's allergic to sugar. And he was like, well, I've just spent an hour with her and she was fine.
There was one doctor, from my understanding, who rose an alarm about Munchausen by proxy and that this could be likely a case.
Raised an alarm.
Apologies. A bit tired. Raised an alarm about this possibly could be Munchausen by proxy, but then it just didn't go anywhere. And she continued to be medically abused for years afterwards. In the real case, the Munchausen by proxy was only discovered after the murder.
Yeah, so she had to kill her mom to stop this.
Yeah.
And wasn't it that I'm trying to remember, she fell in love with a guy online.
Yes.
And then he came to be with her. And then she said the only way we can be together is if we murder my mom.
Well, the man she fell in love with online was severely mentally ill, was telling her about his schizophrenic delusions and hallucinations, and was a very ill person. But obviously Gypsy, not having any real life experience, or she just thought, like, she was like, oh, I just thought love was like a Disney movie, and you just like found the perfect man and then everything was great. And so they both talked about this idea back and forth, what they called plan B of killing the mum. But he also happened to be a nutcase who then showed up and went through with it.
What was plan A?
Oh, I don't know what plan A was. But from my understanding,
crossing,
like,
the border.
Gypsy has not denied her instigating it or being culpable. Yeah.
Well, and she must have been in prison now.
10 years it was.
10 years. Well, there's a lot of support for her online.
A lot of support for her online. Yeah, people are like celebrating. They're ready for her to come out. There's photos circulating. And then you have other people being like, just be normal. Leave Gypsy alone. Like, stop being weird on the internet. She doesn't even know TikTok's really real yet.
Oh, people are making so many fangirl TikToks.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's because in the story arc, this is now her time to have a nice life. So people are very pleased for her. Apparently she has tickets to Taylor Swift's concert this weekend.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know. How old is she now?
I think she's in her 30s.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's just the thing that I do think that the cruelest thing really you can do to someone, other than, I suppose, just sadistically torturing them or trapping them in a basement for years, is destroying their subjectivity.
Yeah.
And not allowing them to have any freedom, not know who they are, and importantly, not be able to develop who they are because you've implanted a false narrative and that relies on keeping them undeveloped.
Yeah, she's 32.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it is true. And like, the medical setting is so good at that. It's so, because it, the subject, the person, is presupposed to be vulnerable. And often illness means that you can't communicate and advocate for yourself, like, by dint of being ill. So people are likely to turn to family or friends or people around you. And it's all about, you know, the doctor having the plan and you listening to the plan, or there's these power dynamics that go on.
It's also to do with, if the mom has convinced one doctor once, so let's say she tried a bunch and then she managed to find one, you know, say higher paying private doctor that pretty much gives you what you want. Because that's what people in this country do. They take their kids to NHS doctors and the NHS doctor is much more even-handed and fair, and you can pretty much pay for a diagnosis from a private doctor.
Yeah.
Now, I know in America it's different, but let's say she tried a bunch of doctors first. The moment she found one that diagnosed her with X illness, all the other doctors afterwards will have not wanted to contradict that doctor because that undermines the medical system.
That's right, yeah.
And it undermines your colleagues and this idea that doctors are infallible.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. And yeah, and I mean, in America, it's all private and it's insurance, but it's all private and the customer's always right. You know, it's less of an ethos of like healthcare provides like a service for the public. It's about, you know, customer satisfaction.
Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen syndrome by proxy are very interesting in that they are an overwhelmingly female disorder.
Correct, yeah.
And by disorder, I don't mean chemical imbalance in the brain. I mean disordered behavior.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, as often with mental illness, I mean, really, it is a mental illness, I would say, if we're going to expand that bag to that. Really, what it's about is that I think that for women, it's often the body is the only site of control they feel they have. So this is also why women have more problems with food.
Yeah.
That becomes so dysfunctional. They get eating disorders, whether that's overeating, undereating, or bulimia. And so that's I think, why so many women make up well, fictitious illness, basically.
Yeah.
That's the new term, right? Fictitious illness disorder or something?
Fictitious disorder, yeah.
Fictitious disorder. And I think then that becomes the case that they're children. They feel their children are property and extensions of their body.
Yeah.
Because they grew them in their body. And look, it's the same with, if you look at, you know, who is a woman most likely to abuse, it is her children.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, of course, men are much more violent. They do much more physical abuse generally in society against a range of actors. But for women, it really is themselves and their children.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's also that thing. There's something about, I don't exactly want to say it's feminine, but I sort of feel a little bit also like, in the psychoanalytic sense, maybe it's feminine, but this thing of wanting to get attention for yeah. something bad happening mm. and being like, oh, there's this difficulty, Gypsy's a victim, my daughter's a victim of X and Y disorder. And then you also start to look like an angel mother.
Yeah.
Oh, you're the mother that gave up work to care for your child. Oh, you're the mother who's struggling to just support this poor girl. And of course, for her, there's no tension at all because she knows this. She's not really ill.
Yeah.
She's not had to bear all of the anxiety, all of the worry, all of the stress that a parent who has a genuinely sick child mm. has to bear. It's 100% just a plus.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there is no minus.
Yeah, and I think that bit that you just said about the child not being separate from the self, and I think there's something really... that whole smothering mother thing. There's something really pathological about...
the devouring mother.
The devouring mother, that's the word, yeah. Who can't form an identity outside of the child or can't form an identity outside of...
Well, typically didn't have one before.
And didn't have one before.
Has a very, very low sense of self. If I were a doctor and I suspected Munchausen syndrome by proxy or even Munchausen syndrome, I would... so. Sorry, I should use the modern term, fictitious disorder. Is that, that's right?
Yeah, and then it's fictitious disorder imposed on another.
I would start to ask them about what else was in their life.
Right.
And I would start to ask what their interests were.
Yeah.
Ask what their ambitions were.
Yeah.
Ask what kind of wishes they have for their child. Who their child is that's different to them.
Right.
But then they would probably just say very negative things or say, oh, you know, she's just... But I'd say, no, not framed in the things that you're attributing. Things not to do with these various illnesses. Explain to me who they are.
Yeah.
And I don't think they could. In fact, there's a friend of a friend of mine. So this friend of mine often moans to me about her other friend who constantly has... essentially fictitious bodily complaints or will speak, who will send her, when she has a real complaint, like a period pain, she will send her a half hour voice note about it.
Right.
And she's had me listen to these voice notes and I actually don't know how she can make up material for 30 minutes around a period, but she does.
Yeah.
And it's so boring, but I'm like, how is she extruding so much from this experience of just having period pain? And basically, it's the case that this woman has a very low sense of self, has nothing going on in her life apart from her body, which, because she's young, is also translate to how she looks.
Yeah.
But and she kind of admits, I don't know who I am. There's nothing about me. She went to some counselor. The counselor was like, write down three good things about you. She was like, I literally don't know what they are.
Yeah.
And she sort of doesn't want anything. She has no desires. She has no wishes. So she's confined fully to her body. And she'll just have these constant phantom ailments that she goes to the doctor about. Doctor can't find anything. She takes time off work. Work get, you know, concerned about it. And she sort of, I don't know what happens, put on a probation list or whatever it is. And you can see how having... no sense of self, very little subjectivity of your own, then just, it sort of just then feeds into like, okay, well, what could there be this, but just concrete, but just to say this turning towards the body or your child's body and this concreteness, the way that they put it in psychoanalysis a lot of the time is it's when someone is so underdeveloped or so primitive and immature, basically. That's the word we'd use. Psychically primitive, psychically immature, they can't really understand their own feelings. Mm. So therefore, it just transmits to the body.
Right, yeah.
And the body instead expresses the unhappiness and pain that they feel that they actually almost are not aware of. Because the one thing I said to my friend about her friend is like, because the friend reports feeling suicidal, feeling depressed. I said, at least she actually is aware of her feelings a bit. Because the full-blown fictitious disorder cases, the person tends to be not aware at all that they even have a mental life.
Right.
Not aware at all that there are feelings and that you can feel good, you can feel bad, and that understand that with any complexity. And instead, it just becomes these classic, I won't name them because I'll get in trouble, but these classic fictitious disorders that cannot be organically found in the body. But so many people say, my life's been blown apart by, and it's always this particular trio.
Yeah, I mean, I think Germaine Greer in The Female Eunuch talks about it in terms of resentment within the family home and within, in relation to husbands and men and children. Whereas if you're in a situation in which you do not have a lot of power, you feel trapped, you feel whatever, and you feel deeply, deeply resentful of the people that you're giving your, that you're basically giving your life for. And this was written in the 1970s. So, you know, women who have very little life outside of the home, what power can you gain and can you have in that situation? No one could argue with the fact that, oh, like you're physically ill, you know, and this gives you the love, the care, and a way of acting out this resentment. Well, like if you're going to have this amazing life, I can't do the dishes, I'm ill.
It's also just a way of being important. Like, oh, I take myself seriously. I have, I just feel really tired all the time. I should go to the doctor. I wonder what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm so important. I go to the doctor. Now, obviously the rest of us, we just go to the doctor and we already feel a certain self-importance in that. Like I'm allowed to go to the doctor if I have a problem and get it sorted. That's normal. But for someone who really just is that like so flat. And so I do agree that, you know, a lot of this is to do with women's subject position, fine, and certainly more so in the 1970s. But a lot of this is to do with having zero subjective power in the sense that, say, Judith Butler might mean it today. To do with you personally, having low self-efficacy is the way that, say, we could put it in psychoanalytic terms.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what Greer says, basically, in so many words. I mean, I didn't do a good job at articulating it, but yeah, she basically says that when you feel like you have nothing in your life, you know, you don't have an internal world, you don't have anything to fall back on to inform you about who you are, basically, what you have, you only can have things that you can manufacture. And she just says, like, women talk and obsess about these bodily ailments until they become real to them as well. And that's another part of it, is that
that's the thing as well, is that those ailments are felt as real.
Yeah,
a lot of they really are. So the person believes this is real, and it is real in a sense. It's just not organically real. Actually, it's more real in terms of you can't get rid of it because you would actually have to go to the psychological roots.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas most people could, you could get an antibiotic, you could have some physiotherapy, you could do more exercise, improve your health. If the basis of that felt pain or tiredness or whatever it is psychological, okay, well, good luck having full-time psychoanalysis and we'll see you in maybe 5 years and hopefully it will be better.
Yeah.
But that's a much longer project than going to the doctor for some antibiotics, as we all would, or going to see a chiropractor or whatever.
Yeah. Don't see a chiropractor, though.
Oh, yeah, don't see a chiropractor. That's a load of hookum, apparently, too.
I'm not a fan.
Okay, myself. Physiotherapist.
Yeah, physiotherapist. Yeah, and it's hard because I think for these women, and it is almost always women, because women are more likely to turn. Also, I think women are more likely to turn like aggression, hostility, those kinds of feelings inward towards themselves. Men are more likely to direct them outward.
Well, it's just that thing that when men are unhappy, they make other people's lives hell. When women are unhappy, they make their own life hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do wish that there was a bit more recognition of it. Okay, I get that it's relatively uncommon, but I know several people that have been thrown out of hospitals for just taking the piss.
Yeah.
That have had doctors literally sort of shake their arm and say, there is nothing wrong with you,
yeah.
which we can consider as really rude or really dismissive. But if the doctor's right, actually you're taking up space in a hospital
yeah.
for someone who has a real illness.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to go and get psychological help. And it would have been really good had a doctor been rude to Gypsy Rose's mum.
Yeah.
And said, there is nothing wrong with your daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm just so surprised. Wasn't there ever an intervention by social services or anything?
No, there was a lot of moving around
right.
to avoid it. And there was also Hurricane Katrina. There was lots of records that were lost and all of that, apparently. But no one really questioned the story. And apparently she would, you know, be very well researched. She will have known the kind of diagnosis that she wants before she went in. She had some medical knowledge. That's often another sign of...
When someone's bought books on something.
And apparently it's a bit of a thing with nurse mums.
Right.
Mums who've had a healthcare profession. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to sort of say to people, like, wouldn't you like to develop your life in a real way? But I think that those people believe it's foreclosed for them.
Do you think they're aware of that?
My friend of a friend is kind of aware.
Yeah.
And she sort of, you know, she has sort of vaguely had relationships, but she pretty much says, I know that I don't have anything to offer someone. There's nothing good about me. And it's more like there's nothing about you.
Yeah.
And it's, but you know, as I said to my friend, like, well, what could you say? How could you say to someone, whatever way you've developed, you don't have a single good quality. You have a few qualities. They're all bad.
Yeah.
You're like competitive with your friends. You're envious. You sort of have to copy other people because you can't come up with anything in life that is your own interest or your own sort of thing that you want to do. You haven't developed yourself in any way apart from how you look and your body. That's all you're obsessed with. And yeah, you're bored all the time because you're a really boring person. And yeah, you're just a bit like, the one thing is she's just sort of a bit covetous because she can see that other people in the world have things and she doesn't have.
Mm.
But she also doesn't seem to want.
Yeah.
If you say that to someone, you go, well, you need to develop yourself. Go forth. They don't feel like they have the means to do it. They will just sit in a, you know, chair and think, what's my immediate surroundings? It's me. It's my body.
Yeah. And I don't think the way things are socially organized at the minute also helps. There isn't a lot of, I think for a lot of women and girls, they're kind of really rewarded for being beautiful, looking a certain way, being well-behaved, which often means being smaller, being quieter, using your body less. Often girls get lots of attention when they're sick, when they're growing up. And I just think that we don't really, the way things that are set up socially now is not conducive to women and girls developing a strong sense of self, basically.
And it's also the case, I suppose, if you look a certain way, you probably do feel validation of, like,
oh yeah,
the likes you'll get on social media or whatever, but that has a time limit on it. But I feel like, yeah, it's very hard, especially when those individuals that live through the body and just how they look have sort of been told that the world will be delivered to them.
I think that's what I was getting through as well. That's
and
message.
So they think, well, what they really think is going to be delivered is a man who will look after them forever, and then they'll just get married and have a kid. And, you know, having a kid is time consuming. I have always thought, where is this overestimate from? Because again, it's more friends of friends and just women I've met through, yeah, some of my friends that I've been like, okay, I understand that they spend their entire life on how they look, but they're not really doing anything financially out of it. I've always thought, why aren't they on OnlyFans? I don't want them to be, but I have thought about this question.
Yeah, Jen, you're always understanding things from this, like, career, success perspective, and a lot of women don't view it from that point of view at all.
But it just then seems like you've made all this effort and then you just want to be this docile beacon that just maybe attracts a man with money. But then they all seem to don't have standards. So they're not like the FDS women that are like, you know, we go for dinner on the first date. I need to know you're serious. I need to know you have a basic, decent income. They'll also just like, I mean, I've told you some of the stories, but just like, same day sexual activity.
Well, I think that they think of it as a reward in and of itself and that they can live with themselves. I feel like there was that feminist quote, and I one of those ones that it's like, you know, will we ever find out who said it? If someone knows who said it, let me know. But it's like, being pretty is not the tax to exist as a woman. Like, you could just exist. And I think for a lot of women, when they wake up in the morning, when they're eating breakfast, on their way to the shop, like, they always have to look a particular way to feel okay within themselves.
But then I also find some of these women, I would do a better job. If that was my main task in life, I'm like, okay, if this is your thing, why aren't you going to the gym every day?
But it is also a bit of a thing with like the cosmetic surgeries and the, if you're fair skinned, make yourself tanned. If you have straight hair, make it curly. If it's curly, make it straight.
Yeah.
It's also, I think Germaine Greer says, it's less about trying to reach like an ascend to an aesthetic and more about not looking like yourself.
Yeah.
Like, how can I? And then she just explains that it's because women have a relationship, and men, a relationship with women's bodies. The primary relationship is one of disgust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the more you don't look like yourself, the less disgusted you are by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think it is just purely about, so even if they look like, frankly, grotesque with all these like cosmetic surgeries and different augmentations and different funny weird things.
Well, it's that you can take those shortcuts. I mean, they're quite expensive shortcuts, and this seems to be like, you know, if you get filler, you have to have it every 3 months. If you get Botox, you have to have it every 3 months. Like, the bill starts racking up, and it's not just like an annual bill, it's like a quarterly bill for all these different procedures. A friend of mine has a term for it where she's like, it's fake skinny. And she's talking about those women that don't actually go to the gym but post photos on their Instagram as if they really look after their body and stay in shape, but they don't. They get surgery every so often.
Yeah.
Or surgeries.
Well, I think women who are doing it to themselves through obsessive gymming are doing the same thing, though.
But at least with that, you are actually accumulating health.
That's true.
And some of them then become, you know, fitness coaches over the internet that people pay a bit of money to. Again, they make it more like,
you're still thinking of it from this point of view that,
yeah, but I am interested in women's independence and financial autonomy. It's good to have that. So you're making your way in the world in like a material way. Yes, okay, you've got this thing where you're like, I need to look good, but you're improving your health and you're making a bit of money. You can see how this is what men do, right? It's more of a healthy thing than it being this like stagnant being who's just sat there obsessing and then not using that for activity.
It's just about being like ornamental. Like, it's just about being an ornament that sits and doesn't do anything. Like, it's being an object. It is, I mean, it's an abused term, but it is objectifying. Yeah. It's about becoming an object.
Well, you can't do that much if you've got long nails.
Yeah, and the hair and everything, yeah. It's like disabling.
Yeah.
The tight clothes, everything. It's like about making you less of a person.
Yeah. No, there are some weird, confused narratives going on where, again, there's a certain type of woman that will dress like, well, we've described it as a bimbo, but it's essentially like a porn.
Like
performer.
A porn star. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they will sleep with men again, same day. And then they don't understand why those men discard them. Not all men do discard them, but some do. And it's sort of like, well, what did you expect? Do you think that porn performers, do they show at the end of the porn that the woman gets taken out for dinner and then the next day they go to the park and then that weekend they have like a lovely romantic evening taking a riverboat ride? No. Yeah. So why did you add that on?
I think it is about like, oh, if I don't have sex with the man, he'll leave me. And they kind of assume.
Same day.
Yeah.
Has that chance to leave? It's anyway, it's so crazy, these kind of repeated tropes that you see circulating. But I think exactly the type that I've described in My Friend of a Friend, she does essentially have fictitious disorder. If she has a child, there's therefore quite a big chance.
Yeah.
I don't think it's particularly large, because I think a lot of women get enough satisfaction talking about their own bodies as endless ailment lists that no one can resolve. This is also about giving someone an intractable problem, which represents their feeling that there's an intractable problem in their life, and then it becomes represented in this complaint.
Right.
And then also it can never go away because there isn't actually a real problem to resolve.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like Dee Dee Blanchard, Gypsy's mum, was apparently genuinely a sick infant, like was genuinely, like wasn't ill until she was a toddler or whatever. And I think that she just got into her head that being sick basically made you very special.
Yeah.
And being the mother of the sick child was had a certain cachet and certainly had a huge financial reward. You know,
there are some people for who being cared for when sick as a child was the only kind of care that they received.
Yeah. That is a thing. Yeah.
I think that must be a contributing factor. And I just, it's so odd because, it's much more prevalent, I think, than people realize. And I'm sort of heartened, weirdly, by the support for Gypsy.
Me too. Those people who are like, oh, like TikTok be normal, stop posting about her. It's like, people are rooting for her. This is all positive. I understand it being...
Also, she's so down and out still in a way. Like the latest or the most recent TikTok was someone found her buying shoes in Target and she was just buying herself from some like pink flip-flops because she literally left prison without shoes.
Yeah, she got married in prison. I hope that he's a nice guy.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, that's who she was with.
Well, I mean, one of the saddest things was when she did that interview in prison and said, I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. I have so much more freedom than I've ever had.
In prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just imagine the life she's lived for 20 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah. To not even know your own age, it's just like a severe case of abuse. I can't.
Oh, so, I mean, her mom, I don't agree that, like, that man should have murdered her mom, but her mom should have been put in prison for life.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the thing is that when you commit a crime against a child, it is worse than against an adult, because a child can't make sense of it in the way an adult can.
Well, basically, it's like prolonged grooming, basically preventing her from becoming an adult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's also really creepy. I mean, it's really, you know, that whole thing, the classic thing of like teenagers, they start to become obsessed with like actors and pop stars because it's about finding new beloved objects who you passionately love because that's no longer your parents. And it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
It's about that separating process and separation from your original objects, i.e. your parents. It is the maturational process. It is how you mature. So she was ensuring that Gypsy couldn't mature, couldn't get away from her, forever would be stuck in this like child sort of world where she was also then totally controllable. And what's sad is that if you do that to a child early enough, you tend to have to start before puberty, you constitute them differently.
Mm.
So like Gypsy seems to actually be very well developed for someone who experienced this level of child abuse pre-puberty.
Yeah, I think that also I would be interested to hear your psychoanalytic opinion about this, but the fact that it all collapsed, the whole illusion collapsed in such a, for lack of a better word, like such a fuck off way. Like it's just like, it wasn't a gradual, like I slowly realized something was wrong. And then we had some social workers visit. And then it was just all kind of.
And then I got removed and taken to a care home for.
And then they were like, oh, she doesn't actually seem it. Like the whole delusion, hallucination, whatever, like collapsed overnight. You know, the whole thing. She just said her lawyer said to her, like, there's something medically wrong with you. And she was like, I don't have cancer. He was like, no, there's nothing medically wrong with you. And I wonder if the shock of that plus all of that happening in such a short period of time.
Well, it was also the case that her mom was gone.
Yeah, her mom was gone.
Because man had finished her off. I assume he's still in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I think that's often the case, though, right? Like, the way that doubt works, or the way that a psychotic structure, I mean, I'm being very metaphoric here, applying it to a situation, but that there can't be room for doubt.
Yeah.
As soon as there's doubt, the whole thing collapses.
Right.
So it will have been, oh, holy fuck, and this absolute realization that her mother lied to her entire life.
Yeah.
And she's never had an illness. And she then will have had to grieve that she could have had a normal upbringing.
Yeah.
She could have had a normal life, school life, friends, first boyfriend as a teenager, all these normal things. And that her mother essentially robbed her of this unnecessarily. Because I also think that, like, a lot of these people are incredibly lonely. They're the kind of people that do not have close relationships, as in, like, consensual ones.
Yeah.
Whether that's friendships or romance, they don't have long-term relationships that are, you know, close and persist. And therefore, her mom, by kind of, what's the word, like, disabling her, making her a child forever, meant that she always had a close companion.
And, like, physically abusing her, like, inducing illnesses. Like, it was really, really horrific.
Yeah. Well, my opinion is the mom deserved to die. I can't really agree with a man bumping her off, but she certainly deserved to be in prison. And no one's mourning the fact that she was murdered, because everyone knows what a horrific act this was. And we say act, it spanned decades.
Yeah, her whole life, yeah.
And it's sort of just like all of the doctors that did this. I wonder if there was an inquiry.
Well, you're not the public health system. I mean, who do you inquire to? I think
there must be a medical organization that they all sign up to with a certain set of ethics, and then they all get fired by.
I think it's all state by state, so it would be quite the. But there isn't a public. If you have the impression that, like, I think there are departments of health that do, like, regulations and so on, but this whole inquiry thing is a very British thing. It happens because you guys have a national health service that's directly accountable to the taxpayer, which is just not a thing in
but
the
a US. Doctor must be able to get struck off for misconduct.
Oh yeah, you definitely
or
can.
That or that clearly you don't know what you're doing if you think a healthy child is ill.
Yeah, or a healthy adult.
Just because someone says so.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand, though, she induced some of the symptoms. I get it, but I also think that, given how prolonged this was, but again, as she moved around to avoid that, you would start to think, is the mother inducing these illnesses? Or even the fact, though, that doctors don't speak to children is so strange to me. It's like, children can speak fairly cogently from about 6, 7.
Yeah.
Why wasn't she spoken to with her mother out of the room?
And people with learning disabilities.
Yeah.
People with learning disabilities and
can
developmental delays and can communicate. Even nonverbal people can communicate.
Yeah. So it's really odd that the mother was spoken to and she got to speak for Gypsy. So I do think now, I mean, she seems to be doing a lot of media. She must be getting paid.
Yeah.
I hope that she sets her life up well and just has, like, a nice existence.
Yeah, I hope so too. Well, anyway, thank you for listening to our Gypsy Rose Blanchard is released from prison special.
Yeah, this is part of our another true crime. I think we've got one more true crime episode.
Yes, and one idea in the bank.
Yeah. All right, well, see you next week.
Thanks for listening.